The Committee on Higher Education will come to order. This morning's agenda, we have Senator Fischbach has Senate file, House File 821.
Yes.
Senator Fischbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that we had in front of us, and we had kind of laid it over in it. And there is language included in the omnibus bill, but there has been a request for clarification from MNSCU regarding the Farm and Small Business Management Education Program, and this would be in on-site individualized instruction that they're asking for clarification and when that senior citizen exemption would come into play. So we wanted to add that language to make sure that it was clear. Last time it was in front of the committee, there was some question. I guess the fiscal note hadn't been completed at this point, and although the fiscal note does show that there is fiscal implication, this is only, it's not an implication to our general fund. It is the issue with tuition at the college level, at the MNSCU level, excuse me. So I think that and the House is moving this as a standalone bill, even though there is some language in the omnibus bill. So I would like to send this on to the floor if that would work.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Let the record show that we do have a quorum. Proceed.
Well, I would make the motion, first of all, for the A1 amendment. And I believe that's in the packets.
And to the A1 amendment.
That is the clarifying language that MNSCU wanted regarding the Farm and Small Business Management Education Program.
Very good. Is there any questions on the A1 amendment? No questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A1 amendment passes.
And then, like I said, Mr. Chair, this is the bill that is in reference to lowering that age from 66 to 62 as to who would qualify for, reduced or free tuition. And that language that we just added was what MNSCU requested to clarify that. And the fiscal notes available, and I mentioned earlier, that is basically the tuition loss that they would experience. It's not a cost to our general fund, so we don't have to track it. So if I would like to move that that House File 821 as amended be passed and sent to the floor.
Any further questions? Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Fischbach, this is a big fiscal loss to MNSCU. It's almost $500,000 a year in lost tuition. Whether you agree or whether any of us agree with the policy change and whether it's appropriate, I don't know that it's fair for us to force MNSCU to absorb these cuts or the cuts that they would have to make in order to account or accommodate for this loss of revenue. What's your position on that, Senator Fischbach?
Well, I would say, I guess, MNSCU hasn't opposed this language, and they did ask for the clarifying language, so I guess Mr. Chair, that would be my answer, is they haven't opposed this language. I don't think that they believe that that it would be that difficult to accommodate this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, it doesn't look like the additional language that was put on with the A1 amendment is related in any way to the fiscal note, is it?
Well, I believe there is some, and I haven't had the opportunity. I read parts of it, but haven't had the opportunity to study it at great length. But my understanding is there is some discussion about the under the assumptions, there is some discussion about the on-site individualized instruction.
Senator Latz, maybe Ms. Weidman could shed some light on that for
Thank
us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, if you look at page 3 of the fiscal note, basically what this will do compared to the language as it was initially drafted, it would actually allow additional give Minsky additional tuition revenue. So the 434 is actually the difference between what they would have lost previously compared to, because you are now allowing them to charge a larger fee for those classes that they're offering, because the farm business management programs would not be subject to reducing fees for individuals that are, you know, the 62 age would not apply. It would be 66.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Lyons.
Ms. Weidman, the $434,000, is that after accounting for the A1 amendment or before?
Madam Chair, Senator Lance, that's after.
So, with this
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lance, this was language that Minsky requested. So they are aware of the fiscal implications of this language. And I believe there was going to be someone here from Minsky.
Is there anyone
apparently
that
person is not here. So,
is there anyone here that wants to testify either for or against? Welcome, and for the record, please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dick Jorger. I'm the System Director for Agriculture and Program Coordination, Minnesota State College Universities. And with me is Eric Dieters. Eric?
Thank you. My name is Eric Dieters. I'm Dean of Management Programs with Riverland and South Central Colleges.
Proceed.
Thank you. What I would like to is to address the answer to the question about the $424,000. It actually improves our situation with the passage of the proposed amendment. So it does help us to have the amendment.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
So, sir, what you're saying is your losses would have been larger than the $434,000 per year, but for the A1 amendment. So you've reduced your loss somewhat, but is that right?
What I'm saying is we anticipate the improvement in our net will be, as she's stating here, about $400,000.
Senator Latz, Ms. Weidman has some more input for us.
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, actually it's you're looking at the University of Minnesota numbers. You have to look at page 4 for the Minsky numbers, and that's $320,000.
So help me understand this. The $320,000 is your net loss of revenue after the A1 amendment is adopted. So you like the A1 amendment because it reduced the cut that you would face, or the loss of revenue that you would face, but you're still facing an over $300,000 loss of revenue as a result of this bill. Am I wrong about that?
If the amendment is passed, okay, we will cut the loss that we're currently experiencing in the magnitude of about $320,000, as the information is sharing here.
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, the additional revenue loss, there would be other individuals that would be taking, you know, that would be participating in the senior program. And for those individuals, there would be a tuition revenue loss because you're reducing the eligibility from 66 to 62. So there would be less revenue for that group of individuals.
So maybe I should
that would not be taking the farm business management class.
Maybe I should just ask for the bottom line. With the bill in the shape after the A1 amendment, what is the revenue loss to Minsky?
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lance, $320,000.
And,
Senator
Mr.
Lance.
Chair, in addition to that, with regard to the University of Minnesota, what's the net revenue loss to the University of Minnesota with the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, the University of Minnesota does not have any of these types of programs, and so their loss would just be from other courses that are taken by individuals in the senior program, and their loss would be $434,000.
So, Mr. Chair, the total cost of this bill to our higher education institutions is about $750,000.
Ms. Weidman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lance, that's correct.
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach, you know, the previous committee and the previous legislature decided that the retirement age is going up, that the whole discussion, this program was designed to be people in retirement who are taking classes for personal enrichment on a space availability basis. So, and non-credit, I'm not actually sure about the credit or non-credit part. They get credit for it. Is that true, Dr. Weidman?
Mr. Chair, no, Senator Pappas, I believe the courses can be either for credit or not for credit.
So I'm just concerned that now we're – I'm surprised we have so many people in their 60s that are still taking college courses. But I still – I do still, you know, think that they – there's no reason to not have them paying their fair share. If there's an – if there's a economic issue involved, they can, like students young – under the age of 62 can apply for a Pell Grant or apply for a state grant to help them pay for it. So it doesn't make sense to me to give this one segment these kind of special privileges that we're not also offering to younger students. I think we should treat them alike. When we get to the age of 66, or maybe we could discuss another number, and then, you know, I don't remember the rest of the law, but it does seem to me that we talked about it being on a space availability basis, which means you're not taking away the spot of a paying student. So I'm kind of surprised at the fiscal note, because that was really all my assumption. The fiscal note kind of assumes that you're taking the space of a student who would be paying otherwise. So I still don't really care for the bill, and I do think that, you know, we should even look at relook at that age number again.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, we're not changing any of the as available any of those qualifications, just the age. So it would still be under all of those requirements that you mentioned.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Where is that language? Because I always thought it was as available too.
Right.
Is it somewhere else in statute, or because it's not in the bill?
Ms. Weidman.
I planned.
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, the language is in 135A.52, and if you give me a few minutes here, I can look through this real quick. And I'll just read the language too, perhaps, except for an administration fee established by governing board. At a level to recover costs to be collected only when a course is taken for credit, a senior citizen who is a legal resident is entitled without payment of tuition or activity fees to attend classes offered for credit, and audit any courses offered for credit, or enroll in any non-credit courses in any state-supported institution of higher education when space is available after all tuition-paying students have been accommodated. And then there is the definition of a senior citizen.
Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand Senator Latz's argument. I would look to the other side of that, is if this is a cost of almost $750,000 to the universities in Minsky, it's a savings of $750,000 for our senior citizens. And I'm in favor of with this economy, to help our senior citizens save that amount of money. Also, to the argument that they're eligible for financial aid like anyone under 62 would be, well, then that eats up financial aid for younger students and would not allow them for that aid. So I would support this amendment. I would support this bill. I think it's a good bill.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, someone's got to pay these costs. So if it's not the senior citizens, then it's either the other students that are borrowing to pay. They're cross-subsidizing the non-paying senior citizens that are there, or it's the taxpayers generally that are paying for it. So it's a transfer of costs to the rest of the taxpayers. to pay for the senior citizens, regardless of their financial ability to pay for tuition. So you could have a millionaire senior citizen who's 62 years old can go into a Minsky course and sit next to it, having their class paid for by the struggling 20-year-old student sitting in the seat next to him, who's either borrowing to pay for it, whose parents are foregoing other costs of life to be able to help pay for it, or which the taxpayers are paying for it to subsidize their education. Or the offerings are reduced, or whatever Minsky has to do to cut $300,000 out of their budget. So the quality of the education or accessibility to, you know, their services are also reduced. I don't think that's a cost worth paying. I'm certainly not willing to pay for someone who's got $250,000, $500,000 in the bank so that they can take a class for free at Minsky just because they've reached the magic age of 62, especially if their reason for taking it is because they want to improve their skills so they can continue to be employed. Everyone else in that situation has to pay their fair share. I don't think it's fair for the rest of the taxpayers to subsidize that, let alone the other students that are there. But I had a question about the assumption in the fiscal note. If this is on a as-available-only basis, does that change the fiscal note, or was that assumption built in to the fiscal note?
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, in reading the fiscal note, I believe when the fiscal note was prepared, what they used was the number of individuals that have participated in this program in the past. So that would include, you know, there wasn't whether they took it for credit or not for credit. It's just participants in the program.
So I have a question for Mr. Dieters. Excuse me a minute. Or for Mr. Joyer. If we have an empty seat, and I'm an adjunct professor, I have classes where actually my classes have always been full, but I can imagine with a 49-seat classroom that maybe I only have 47 students in a semester. There seems to be some questioning of fiscal notes, not only this year, but in past years, by all members of all parties. Do you honestly believe that this cost exists for someone to sit in an empty seat in a classroom?
Let me start, and I'll have Eric, if you will, Chair Carlson, respond. A program's a little bit different. When someone enrolls, the costs immediately start, which is different than in a regular classroom because it's individualized on-site instruction. When the wheels turn, the costs start. Okay, and so that's a big difference. The cost of instruction with a low-ratio program, it's a real cost that the local college is incurring. Okay, I mean, it's as I say, boots on the ground immediately, and so the costs are being generated that have to be fielded differently by that college than when I have a large lecture class.
Eric, does...
Mr. Dieters?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I think where the confusion is coming in is between a normal classroom setting on campus. And in that sort of situation where you've got 49 seats available, 47 are filled up, is there a lot of extra cost to adding that one person in? Not in that situation. But when we talk about farm business management, small business management, where it's individualized on-site instruction, that's where the problem becomes. Because a classroom is on-site, and it costs instructor time, travel time. Those costs are being incurred without any tuition to offset them. And that's why the separation between management programs and the normal classroom setting.
And so, Mr. Dieters, then, with this A1 amendment that makes these farm and small business management programs not eligible, that should alleviate that problem, shouldn't it?
It should, right.
Thank you, Mr. Dieters. Senator Sharon.
May I ask, are these also online courses that would that the seniors are eligible for?
Mr. Chair, I am not, that's a very good question. I am not 100% sure on that. It doesn't indicate that in the fiscal note, but that may be something that would be addressed in the other portion of the law when they talk about the qualifications of it. And maybe, Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, maybe nobody ever thought of it to address it.
Hey. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. It just popped in my head as you were talking about this particular program. The online courses are labor intensive as well, and as well the technology as well as the communication system. So I think we should be looking at this more closely. And I would just remark, if I may, Mr. Chair, that if there is cost savings here, I mean, if you could book cost savings in the higher ed bill, we should look at whether or not we want to continue the program at all and take the resources and give them back to the university to help keep tuition down. I just think we ought to consider that. In the past, we've assumed there wasn't significant cost to this because it was unused space or it was just sitting in sort of and not absorbing resources. But if that's not the case, I think we really should look at this and look at it as going to the bottom line that helps these universities reduce the potential increases in tuition.
Senator Olling first and then Senator Pappas. Senator Olling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, when we put this into statute back when we did it affect the university? Did they have to obey that statute? And I always thought that we couldn't tell them what they had to do, that their Board of Regents had to make that decision. So I'm just a little puzzled about the fiscal note from them because I didn't know if they didn't want to do this, if they didn't want to make the change, do they have to?
Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly when it was put into law originally. I mean, I know they changed dates or changed ages. If there was that, maybe Ms. Weidman could help us with the exact language, because sometimes you can tell from that if it says suggests.
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, Mr. Fuller was talking to me when. So can you please repeat the question?
And Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Roebling wants to.
Ms. Weidman, I was asking if we could direct the university to do this, or if this would be advisory for them. And if they don't want to do it, they don't have to do it. So then there would be no fiscal note involved from them.
Ms. Weidman.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I guess it would, the Board of Trustees and the Board of Regents have authority to set tuition, so they could waive tuition for any course that they offer. So, it's their prerogative to do that.
Mr. Fuller.
That's an open, Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling. The definition in the law includes specifically the University of Minnesota. So it squarely raises the issue that you just raised. And they could allege that they have autonomy and fight that fight. I think they've chosen not to. Whether it's inherent managerial authority for them running the institution, which is the test, and they have that authority, and we can't tell them to do this, they could make that argument. I don't think they've chosen to do that.
Senator Rowling, did you have a follow-up? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just was wondering, because we always have mainly advised the university to do something we want, and we haven't mandated it. But if it says in current law it includes the University of Minnesota and they've followed it, they must have been okay with it, or they could, I would think they could challenge us on it.
Senator Pappas, I wanted to get to your question.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, there's someone here from the U.
Mr. Iverson.
Mr. Chairman, Todd Iverson from the University of Minnesota. As members of the committee have raised the issue, I wanted to be very clear. When the university is requested to do something in statute, we look at that very seriously and take it very seriously. and do what is requested of the university. We have looked at this, and where the direction we were given from the Department of Finance on this fiscal note was to look at it as if those seats were full. If there was a paying student in that seat, what would the revenue be? Those were the directions we were given on the fiscal note. So that is the way that we have answered the question. We, on any piece of legislation that you pass to us and request us to do something, we always, unless the Board of Regents has a discussion about it and decides otherwise, we'll defer to the wisdom of the legislature and do as you request, unless the board sees an inherent conflict in our mission.
So, Mr. Iverson, if I understand you correctly, the fiscal note is prepared based upon a paying student sitting in that chair, not the actual cost. So $320,000 is not really the cost to the university. Is that correct?
That is the potential revenue we could see if there was a student in that seat. That is how we were asked to prepare the fiscal note. I can't tell you one way or the other. We answered the question in the way we were asked.
Thank you. Mr. Ullman, did you have anything that you wanted to add from Minsky's perspective on this that might shed some light that could help us out?
I didn't even call you.
Welcome, Mr. Ullman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we have to go back on how we got here on this issue. This issue was a legislative policy discussion last year coming from the House that moved the number in the senior citizen language from 62 to 66 years old. What we did is looked at it and said, fine, if that's the legislative discussion, and we did not write up fiscal gains or fiscal losses, because I think this the latest discussion you had with Mr. Iverson is exactly on point. If there is a seat there and a new person comes in that seat, there is not a revenue loss for a campus unless there is someone that got bumped for that seat that is a paying student. So, in essence, it's a question of how you write that fiscal note, and I don't know how else you would write that fiscal note other than the way it was presented to you because of the cost of it.
So, Mr. Ullman, help me out here. If last year, when we moved the eligibility age from 62 to 66, and there was a decision not to have a fiscal impact to the positive for either the university or Minsky, wouldn't moving it back also not have an impact? And also, based on the language being an empty seat, are we just really faced with another fuzzy math fiscal note?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't think it's a fuzzy math fiscal note. I think what it is how do you put together a fiscal note based on legislative direction of providing this benefit to senior citizens is kind of how I would look at it. I think Senator Latz mentioned it earlier on a gain or a loss based on age. I would equate it similar to that of the fishing license. You charge a different cost for a fishing license for a senior citizen than you do a individual that's 42 years old. This is the same kind of legislative policy. That is why Minsky's position has been pretty clear that this is a legislative discussion. That's the way we laid it out 2 years ago, and that's the way we're continuing to move it this year. Now, having said that, when the policy was changed from 66 to 62 years old, I can assure you there were quite a few phone calls made to the Office of the Chancellor and many legislators with concern about this benefit being taken away. Now, to clarify, our appreciation is that it is defined now that this is not a customized training type thing, because that's when your expenses could get out of control, especially a farm business management or another one-on-one type of course that would be a concern to a primarily a two-year campus.
I guess I would maybe challenge you on the analogy with a fishing license, because I don't think that for a senior citizen it requires an empty seat in the boat in order to get the reduced. So that analogy might not be exactly correct. However, Senator Roebling.
The other thing is that we took away the big discount for seniors for fishing licenses at 65, and I think it's you get a free one when you're like 90 now. I mean, I'm serious. I think that's right.
I'll support that.
Because we actually had a lot of complaints about it. I remember receiving them because they were not happy when we took away their free or reduced cost fishing licenses, but they had more time to fish and they were catching a lot more fish. And we decided that that wasn't going to be fair to everybody else. So but there was a lot of noise about it. But the thing that concerns me is I would never intend to have a paying student bumped from a class to put a free tuition senior citizen in. And if that happens, that would be a real shame. And the law says it shouldn't happen that way. I really think it probably, with the exception that we've made in the amendment, where it would be a real cost to an institution for those types of programs, it shouldn't really cost any more. The question is, for me personally, is what is the right age? I guess I'm not sure. At 62, I often think you may still be wanting to be in the workforce and be gaining skills to gain income. And if that's the case, I don't know that they should be getting free tuition, because in that sense, why wouldn't we help somebody out who is like a single parent who has no income, but we want them in the workforce? And I mean, how do we make the choice of who gets this free benefit? Because there is an empty seat there. I'm not sure. But I was not really supportive of this earlier, but then I saw an ad in my local paper. We have no MNSCU institutions in my area, but we have a Minnesota School of Business. And lo and behold, they have an ad in there saying anyone 62 and over can come here for free tuition. And I think our policy probably drove that for them. And so if some of the private for-profits are doing it now, and I'm sure they have a similar policy that there has to be a seat available, I don't know, maybe it's something we should do, or maybe we should tinker with the age a little bit. But trying to figure out when would people be doing it, mainly to earn income so that they can have an increase in their income, and when would they be doing it mainly for self-enrichment and we wouldn't have to charge them for it.
Mr. Ullman.
Mr. Chair and members, we are not aware of any circumstance in which a revenue-paying student has been bumped or cannot get into a class because the slot is filled by a non-revenue student, such as a senior citizen, 68 or 69. That would not make sense for any campus. So that we have not heard any complaints along those lines.
Ms. Weidman.
Mr. Chair, I was just looking at the language again, and in terms of, you know, the assumptions for the fiscal note, the language about space being available has always applied. So the numbers used to do the fiscal note, you know, the same students, it was just looking historic in the past how many students participated, and even in the past, those students could not have taken a class unless there was space available. So that requirement is consistent, be it under this language or be it under the previous language. The only thing that's changing is the age. But Senator, the space available applies in all cases. So the numbers used to do the fiscal note are accurate.
Thank you, Ms. Weider. Senator Pappas.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do think that's helpful when you drill down in the fiscal note. And I'm less concerned about that because I think the marginal cost is really unclear. I think it's going to depend on the type of classroom that it is. And I'm an adjunct professor as well. So I'm thinking about if I have a student who's auditing my class on a space availability basis, it really kind of depends on the student. I mean, it could create more work for me as a faculty member. I mean, I'm already underpaid, as we know, we are underpaid. And it also could take time from the other students because this person is going to participate in the class and is going to kind of take up air and oxygen in the class away from the paying students. So there's that issue. But really, the strongest issue for me is just an equity issue. Is, you know, you go to Herberger's now and the senior discount is 55. I was shocked at that. When I first went over there, I said, oh, I certainly don't qualify for the senior discount. Mm-hmm. Movies, the senior discount is 62. And we actually want seniors to stay in the workforce. And a lot of times our seniors do have more disposable income than young people who have families, who are paying for daycare, or the middle-aged people who are still have kids in college. And so to me, it just doesn't seem fair that at that young an age of 62, and I'm going to be 62 in June, so I consider that a very young age, that we should have this kind of advantage over young people who are still struggling with, you know, college tuition and with huge debt loads. So it's just kind of an equity issue for me, which is why I agreed with it. Last year it should be 66, and if the committee feels like there's some compromise here that, you know, we can all kind of live with, I'd be open to, you know, halfway.
Senator Pappas, to your point of fairness, a citizen of the state of Minnesota that's 62 years old has likely been paying taxes for probably 40 years, assuming that they graduated from college age 21, 22. And since the cost of our education to our students is only roughly half of what the true cost is, and the taxpayer has been paying that other half of the cost for 40 years, Senator Pappas, I would think that the fairness in this would be, how about a little something back? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, we do have a Minsky confirmation that we need to get to today, too. And so I would just like to renew my motions. I know that we are motion on the bill as amended because I know that we've had a good discussion, and we will continue. We're sending it to the floor. And, Senator Pappas, if there's some compromise we can come up with, and I think, you know, what came to my mind was maybe a change going to 63. Then you wouldn't qualify for a couple more years, Senator Pappas. but I mean,
that was confidential, by the way.
Oh, and Mr. Chair, we can continue to discuss it as it moves and before we take it up on the floor. But I, out of respect for the young man who we have as his confirmation hearing today, I'd like to get to that. So I renew my motion to what is this, House File 821 as amended, be sent to the floor.
Senator Lass.
Mr. Chairman, just in response to the chairman's comments, I presume that person been paying taxes for 40 years got their money's worth for 40 years already. They already have roads they drove on for 40 years. They got kids in the public schools that probably got educated. They got the benefit of the state parks for 40 years. They haven't paid, and they paid for all the other people who went through Minsky and the higher education institutions that helped support the job that they had for 40 years. They already paid their taxes. They already got their benefits. The question is, what do we do now? And I think Senator Roebling was spot on, which said, if I had to make a choice here, I'd rather give that free seat for which they could get credit, if it's on an available basis, to a young single mother who can't otherwise afford to borrow and who's not going to Minsky because she can't have the resources to do it. I'd rather give her the free seat than someone who's 62 years old and has money in the bank and can afford to pay, but doesn't have to just because they reached that magic age. And I think our society would be better off if we did it, if we set our equity priorities that way.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that on line 1.8, we strike 62 and insert 64.
Mr. Chair, you know what?
Senator Fischbach.
because we've had such extensive discussion, I will accept that. I know we still need to take it as a motion, but we'll accept that motion.
To Senator Pappas's oral amendment, changing the age from 62 to 64, is there any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. To the
Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I mean, I want this bill to go on, and so I'm not going to kill it, but I just would say this. In a time of limited resources and in the area of education, I think as a society, you really put your investment on the front end of life in the area of education. There's plenty of time, or at least investment in the area of whether we're health care, housing, nursing homes even, that our state puts forth towards the back end of life. But I think I do agree with comments that I've heard here that maybe at some point we ought to rethink this. You know, our future are our young people, and I think, again, that's just food for thought.
Senator Fischbach renews her motion that Senate House File 821
as amended
be recommended to pass and
sent to the floor.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next on our agenda for today, we have the confirmation hearing for Jacob England. I was going to call you Jason, so it's better I looked, but it's Jason England, please. I believe there is information in the members' packets regarding the confirmation, and Mr. England, if you have any kind of statement that you'd like to make, I know that you weren't able to, I believe you were out of the country when we did the last group of MNSCU trustees, and so I'm glad you were able to make it and you made it home safely. So if you have a statement you'd like to make, and then we can ask for questions or comments from the committee.
Sure.
So welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair Fischbach. And to the committee, I'd like to just say thank you very much for rescheduling this confirmation. I know your time is precious, and I'm honored that we made time for this. And also to the comment, my mom almost named me Jason, so I almost would respond to either one. So, but thank you very much for this. This will be a second appointment to the MNSCU Board of Trustees. And a little background on myself, I think my resume is in front of you there, but a non-traditional student, as many of our students at MNSCU are, attended public schools in Apple Valley, ISD 196 down in Burnsville, Apple Valley, Eagan. Went to the Berklee College of Music out in Boston for a year, started a rock band, and then toured North America for about 4 years playing original music, about 600 concerts, and then moved into the mortgage industry with a mortgage consultant position with Wachovia and learned about forming relationships with real estate agents and networking and that type of thing. From there, I went back to school and started attending the Normandale Community College, completed an associate's degree at Normandale in May of 2009, and then transferred to the University of Minnesota, where I'll be graduating on Monday with an undergraduate degree in finance. And through my time attending school full-time at the U, I've also been working with Cargill, and I'm a full-time employee of Cargill right now.
Thank you very much, and Senator Pat.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jacob. I just wanted to know, this was kind of confusing to me. This is, you're really in the middle of a two-year term. Is that the
correct
case? So your term is actually up on 2012?
July of 2012, you got
2012.
It.
So you just have one more year, and they're two-year terms, and it's your second two-year term. Because you must have started out when you were at Normandale, and then we've kind of followed you through your educational, and now you're employed.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator, that's exactly right. Okay. 1 year into Normandale was when I heard about the position on the Board of Trustees and applied at that point, and then finished 1 year at Normandale and still have attended a number of our colleges for online courses and so to speak. So that transfer is something that I'm really familiar with and have had a firsthand experience with attending a lot of our schools. But I'd love to stand for further more questions. That's the end of my statement.
Further discussions or comments, questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am wondering how those transfers actually worked, because you said you went to the University of Minnesota. So how did your transfers from Minsky to the U of M actually work? Were you able to carry all your credits over?
Yes, Madam Chair Fishbrecken. Yes, that's exactly the way it worked. Normandale has the Minnesota transfer curriculum, as it's set up, it worked perfectly in my situation. And actually, a few credits from the Berklee College of Music helped me to few elective credits. So the path that I was hoping to take entering Normandale ended up being the path that I took. So from day one at Normandale, I was taking credits to meet transfer curriculum goals and a few extra classes that was required by the school that I attended at the U. But everything transferred seamlessly. So it was a good kind of personal education, and it's nice to be able to apply that in our transfer conversations now, because I know so many of our, well, it worked well for me.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And Mr. England, as a student representative, how have you been able to keep in touch with students?
Yes, thank
Mr.
you.
England.
Madam Chair. That's an excellent question. Being that I'm not on campus every day, that's something that I make extra steps to continue to do. The leadership of the State College Student Association and the State University Student Association and I are in pretty close touch, as well as, I don't know if you have Facebook accounts, but almost every single day I'm back and forth with students on issues on Facebook. I actually have been more in touch with students because of Facebook than I was before having a Facebook account. So it's really, I mean, I could even pull it up right now. You know, I mean, there's so many different touch points that become available just because of that network. So making it a point to be in touch electronically with the leadership of both statewide student associations. Then I also make it a point to attend their biannual conferences, every opportunity that I can to attend their biannual conferences. And to make sure that there's still that physical touch point, that still physical presence.
Thank you.
And Mr. England, some of us are hip enough to have faith.
Oh, that's so good. I'm glad to hear.
Senator Sharon.
Even us seniors.
There's no median age.
Thank you, and thank you for your service. I wonder if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about two or three critical issues that you think in your position you confront the Minsky system with in your role on the board.
Mr. England.
Thank you, Madam Chair Fishback. And Senator, are you speaking specifically to issues I'm interested personally or that we face as a system?
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, as a system.
Okay.
Mr. England.
Excuse me. I'm assuming that it is your perspective that you would be giving on that issue, so that sounds personal.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I think they're combined.
Just wanted to double check. Sure. As a system, I mean, as we're all involved with the budget topics right now, obviously budget is, I think, our largest topic that we face on a day-to-day basis. Coming in to our meetings, coming into a Minsky conversation, every single conversation has a financial component to it. So becoming familiar, comfortable with the fact that we face difficult conversations. Just as your prior discussion before this agenda item, facing difficult decisions about what to cut, what not to cut, what do we prioritize, why do we prioritize that? That is, I think, the number one important issue that we face on a system level. Number two would be maintaining a quality education. We strive to, one of our huge bullet points at MNSCU is the highest quality, most affordable education in the nation. And to be able to stick to our mission and to our vision while seeing reductions in budget, I think, is another major challenge that we face. The third topic is maintaining that affordable education to our students. Personally, I am committed, and I know our board is committed, to low tuition and ensuring that the message that's sent to our current students, future students, and the families of those future students is clear, that education is affordable, and this is something that our doors are open and you can come to our schools no matter your income limits. So I would say those are our three major points of issue.
Senator Sharon.
Yeah, thank you. And I hear those as broad principles that we share between MNSCU and the legislature. What I'm looking for is something more that gives me a feel for what kind of input you would give about those three things. What specifically would you say is the priority, which is your first, prioritizing in a deficit situation? What is it that needs to be done to sustain and improve the quality within the constraints that we're operating now? And what are you recommending or supporting as a choice for improving access to education, those three principles?
Ms.
So what is your voice on this board if you serve?
Definitely. Thank you, Madam Chair. So addressing the number one, the budget cuts. Prioritizing the budget, I would say that our students are our number one priority. Referring to education as a business is not something that a lot of people, it brings up a lot of red flags, but I think it's a good analogy. As we were talking about the fishing license before, this is a pretty good parallel. But getting into a business, I would think business is producing an excellent product, excellent service. That business is going to be sustainable. But if that business is not producing excellent products and excellent services, that business is unsustainable. So being that we're in education, our product is our students. And to invest in our students, to have a quality learning environment for our students is something that I think is our number one priority. So keeping that in mind, when making budget cuts, I would say let's make sure that the quality of our students' experience in college is the number one priority in the decisions that we go about making. And with that said, we evaluate decisions on where to make cuts from there. Students first. The second point, which was, forgetting that.
You were talking about what would your voice be about what the system could do to improve access?
System to improve access would be exactly that, making sure that decisions are made on behalf of our students, the students first perspective, making sure that whatever decision is made is made with our students first. The second decision, making sure that quality of our education is backed up by that. Making sure that our students get a quality education, but the quality of that education is sufficient. Making sure that it's going to meet the needs of the workforce and meet the requirements of our faculty to make sure that students are getting out the door with a great education. I guess those are the two priorities that I would see from my perspective. Also, with regards to tuition, I think that tuition, the number that gets put out for tuition is always a red flag. So keeping the number of that tuition increase as low as possible is something that I also support.
Thank you. Further comments? I am waiting for the exact wording of the motion.
Thank you.
So the motion would be a recommendation by the committee sent to the Senator or Mr. Fuller just they both whispered at the same time and it got very confusing.
I'll make the motion that Mr. Fuller is about to
Senator Roebling
recite.
Will make the motion that Mr. Fuller is going to tell us what the proper wording is.
Who is moving the motion?
Senator Roebling.
Senator Roebling is moving that the committee recommend that the nomination of
Mr. England
is a trustee of the Board of Trustees of Minsky would be recommended to be confirmed by the Senate.
Further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Congratulations. Your name is now sent on to the floor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that is our business for today. So thank you very, very much, members. I appreciate it. I know that there was lots of schedules. So thank you, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Are you in this session having any discussion about the use of available seats?